So my name is Mike Van Quickenborn, and I've been here all week teaching about philosophy, and specifically philosophy in the cinema. The previous four sessions, today's my last session, we head out tomorrow. And so I thought we'd do something different, but maybe it'll be a good discussion based on what we've been talking about previous sessions. what I want to do today is called a Socrates Cafe. So named after Socrates, obviously. But it's kind of the format that we'll be working with is one that was sort of set up by a man by the name of Christopher Phillips. If you go, he has a website. I know it's hard to read under here, but anyway, www.philosopher.org is the website that he has for the Society for Philosophical Inquiry. The Socrates Cafes happen all over the planet. And that website, I think they try and get you to cough up a little bit of money. But anyway, through that, I think you can find out where these things happen. And they also, people typically advertise them in newspapers and so forth. I live in Anacortes and started one there a few years ago. And then somebody else has picked it up. And so that runs every once a month kind of thing if you're in Anacortes. And I know there are others in Seattle and around. excuse me. I mentioned I teach philosophy at Everett Community College, if you're interested in that. But my so-called expertise is really not relevant today in terms of philosophy, because I'm not going to be here to fill anybody in on anything necessarily. It's just to help moderate this discussion. Basically, we'll be able to engage philosophical ideas in a very lightly moderated setting, and I think group participation is going to help us explore these ideas more deeply than we would otherwise be able to. So the way this format works is that we begin by just giving questions that we think are philosophical in nature, and we don't necessarily take a lot of time to define what a philosophical question is, but I would just suggest that any question that can or has been resolved by scientific methods in some way is really not a good question for this format, because that's what the Wikipedia is for, of course. anyway, so I don't want. I just want to say that not an empirical question, because I'd hate to sort of narrow things down too much, and rule out certain things that people are really interested in. So that's all I want to say. What we're going to do is just have you, whoever, spit out a question. I'll write it down on the board, and we'll get a list here going. And then after that, we'll talk about how we decide which one we want to discuss this afternoon.
What's the relationship between moral evil and natural evil?
Okay. That's those terms, moral and natural evil, was something we discussed yesterday in the presentation on religion and film. And so just to give a brief idea, moral evil is typically described as evil that's the result of agency, people choosing to do bad things, versus natural evil, which is evil that's the result of something else, not some choice that somebody made. That could be a question. So we need a question. Okay, other questions?
What makes us human?
Yeah, okay. Brent's question is, along the lines, it's very common in philosophy to sort of define a term. Terms that we take for granted all the time are often ripe for philosophical discussion. What is love? Things like this.
There have been scientific empirical attempts at answering at least pieces of that question.
Yes, right. And maybe we could kind of tangentially refer to those if we end up discussing that. But yeah.
What is the current identity of America?
Okay.
don't write this down, but that just should, our corporation's people.
Don't write that down? Okay, that's a good example, though, something I was going to bring up later. Let's say we did write it down, right? When we're going to decide which question we want to talk about, one of the really, I think, the most important rule of this kind of discussion is to not vote for any question that you think you know the answer to. And I perhaps guess that many of us might, you know, think we know the answer to that question. and so, we wouldn't end up voting for it anyway, but I won't write it down, though, anyway. Unless somebody else wants me to.
Is it possible to know anything?
Okay.
Is existence derived from the self or from the other?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's another sort of rule about these discussions is that, our goal, of course, is never to come to the answer and then we, get to the next one, check that one off. So. Anything else? I feel like an auctioneer here, going, but... Yeah?
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay. It's a good list.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as I said, we're going to vote next. And of course, if you want to choose a question, vote for a question that you like, obviously. But as I said, if you think you know the answer to any of these, refrain from voting for that one. Also, it's not a popularity contest. You don't feel slighted if nobody votes for your question.
Hide our eyes when we raise our hands.
Yeah. Well, and actually, what I'd like to do in the first round of voting, I'd like to have a runoff, is I would allow people to vote for more than one in the first go round. Obviously, if you vote for them all, you haven't voted, so keep that in mind. But vote for more than one if you like, and then we'll take the two, maybe three, but probably two highest vote getters at that point, and then only vote for one or the other and go from there. Okay? So I know it might be hard to read, so I'll reiterate all of them, and then we can do the voting. What's the relationship between moral and natural evil? What makes us human? What is the current identity of the United States? Is it possible to know anything? And is existence derived from the self or the other? All right. So, you can vote for more than one if you like. What's the relationship between moral and natural evil? Who would like to do that one? Okay. What makes us human? What is the current identity of the United States? Is it possible to know anything? Three, all right, this is close. Is existence derived from the self or the other? Four, all right. Well, that was very close, really. Usually not quite so close. These are all good questions, obviously. How many of this are there? There's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
It'll work.
Okay. All right, so we want to just vote on these top two vote-getters here, then?
Mm-hmm.
You're okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so what is the current identity of the U.S. Or versus, so to speak? Is existence derived from the self or the other? Just vote for one or the other. So, what is the current identity of the United States? How many would like to do that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I mean, we have our winner, but just in case. Is existence derived from the self or the other? Okay, so, we're talking about the United States. Should be Independence Day or something. the way we begin then, finally, the dialogue, is simply to more or less take turns suggesting answers, what we think is an answer to that question. And then after that, we can do other things. We can look at that question for embedded assumptions. built-in assumptions, embedded concepts. There might be, in our responses, there might be differences of kind or just differences of degree. There might be logical or consistencies or inconsistencies of what people say in response to that. You know, that's the kind of thing that we might then push to, but we just begin by kind of suggesting what we think is the answer. And now I really want to emphasize this is not going through me, and we're just talking amongst one another here. And I don't have any special expertise. I'm an American, okay? But other than that, I don't have any special expertise to offer here. So who would like to answer? Who thinks they have an idea about the current identity of the United States?
I'd like to define identity
first.
I mean, I don't want to do it. I'd like to have us do it.
Right. if I could say, we could do that, and that's fine with me. I think often what happens is if we just kind of give an answer as sort of our intuition about it, then after that sort of round, if you want to call it that, we might begin to pick out ideas in response to that question, and that's sort of like the second level. Well, we're talking about this, but what do we mean by identity? And then we can go to that, maybe. We could try that.
Yeah, it's something that I feel it would be multifaceted. You would have the self-image, the image of the citizens, the image that the outsider sees, and the image of the people in between and the margins. I would imagine they would all have very different ideas of the identity of this country.
So in terms of an answer, follow the money. I mean, the identity of the United States is, in my mind, it's not a democracy. It's $1, one vote, rather than one person, one vote. And so a lot of what is the United States is identified as is what the money in the United States, you know, where it goes. So it's defined by where the money is going.
But would that be any different than China or Japan? Or
well, okay, so that's a basic question. And where the money is going is concentrating it to an oligarchy. The rich and famous people of this country are getting richer and more famous, or not necessarily famous, but they're getting richer and more powerful, and are able to, the identity is controlled by a smaller and smaller number of people.
I was just going to say, and in the, sort of the beginning, we just kind of hear various ideas, and then we can come back to some of those that, you know, we want to pick up on, but...
Yeah, is there a crosstalk issue here, or do people just sort of talk, is there a dialogue, or are people throwing things out for consideration?
Kind of in the beginning here, the moderator's job really is just to sort of try and elicit these initial responses, and then, you know, Ian can come back and say, well, you brought up this issue of oligarchy, and we, you know, delve into that, but I guess a danger here is if we do that too early, then we might kind of tunnel into that one response, and then there might be others that we didn't get to, so that's all, it's nothing other ideas?
I would say that I think the U.S. is in an identity crisis. And I think from within, I think from the viewpoint of the world looking at us. And for, Ian, how did you say it?
Those on the outside and those on the margins.
Yeah, those on the margins. Yeah, and it's... I can't put into... words that I have a visual of those on the margins, but I can't find the words to fit it. But it's just, it feels like within the states and outside of the states, people looking in, it's almost at times, well, especially now, it feels like everyone's kind of waiting on the edge of their seats to see what's going to happen with the U.S. because we're so identity crisis is my.
Mm-hmm. Relating to the last question, is the existence or the identity derived from within or from others? Mm-hmm. Who defines the identity?
There's a fractured culture that, and I think this is within and without perspective, that has lost its sense of self. And it's becoming more and more fractured.
More and more fractured.
One of the things that pops into my mind is this idea that Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize for not being George W. Bush. So a lot of people have identified that, and I think the U.S. still is sort of, by default, the leader of the free world. So those who made the decision on that prize were possibly saying, all right, it's good that the president of the United States no longer is George W. Bush. So I guess that says something about the identity that those people associate with the U.S.
Quick aside, it could be interesting to discuss whether or not the free world is really free.
Well, I think that's part of the question that we need to answer here.
Right, I mean, I think we heard that in terms of, are we really free, or did democracy come up earlier versus oligarchy? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just share that what it brought to mind for me I was teaching a class on, it was an essay about Islam and democracy, and the author of the essay was an Islamic scholar, and he was kind of contending, well, there's this problem, and Islam doesn't really work with democracy very well. But I just turned to the CIA fact book to confirm my suspicion that there are actually all kinds of democracies that are in Islamic countries. But the point that I thought was interesting is that in terms of the current identity of the U.S., you could look up on the CIA fact book, and they'll have a label for us. You know, I forget it. Well, I mean, it's not as simple as a democracy, but republic or something like this. But they will have a label. Is that oversimplifying or appropriate? I mean, would be the question, I guess.
Are labels an oversimplification of self-identity or other identity by others? Is that
of the identity of such an entity as the United States of America. Maybe it's a mistake on any level, but as maybe the Buddhists might say, but, you know, for the United States, is that too much to ask?
Well, I think what you if it says in that fact book, republic, well, that is so broad that it doesn't differentiate us from, I'm sure there are other republics listed in that book.
Right.
I think so.
Right.
So that doesn't really give us a identity separate from maybe Australia or
Great Britain.
Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with your comment. I think we are now in an identity crisis, and it seems like at least we seem collectively, a large part of the U.S. seems to think that there was a time when we were maybe all of one mind and all that. And, you know, I think we have a certain mythology that we think is part, you know, makes up what many of us think is our identity, mostly mythology.
I think I have to agree with this, that the idea that America has ever had a coherent identity has been something of a myth.
Yeah.
And going back through history, just all through the United States history, there have been bitter, bitter divisions between different viewpoints, and just now it's exaggerated, I feel, due to the prevalence and ease of access the media has, you know, and their ability to sensationalize things.
I also think maybe a lot of people of my generation came of age at a time right after World War II, or born after that, and grew up where the country, probably more than at other times, had pulled together because of World War II. A lot of people had my parents' generation had a common experience of being in the war, growing up in the Depression. So they, we don't have maybe such common experience anymore. Even when it comes to TV, I grew up, almost everybody at school watched this, pretty much the same TV programs. Well, now the media is so diverse, we don't, not that I necessarily want to go back to that.
Maybe it depended on who you were listening to, because post-World War II there were the Army McCarthy hearings, which highlighted one bitter divide.
Sure.
And that was, can be seen as one attack on the diversity of opinion. And there may, you know, maybe it would be interesting to trace through American history looking at attacks on diversity of opinion and see where that leads us to a notion of identity.
Well, that sort of discrimination and attempt to actually rub out, to a certain extent, factions of folks and their beliefs is as old as
the Republic.
I mean, the Alien and Sedition Act came hard on the heels of the American Revolution and basically is still being used. It was, in ways, was the model for some of the stuff that Bush did, the Bush administration engaged. So we've got a strong history of repression and discrimination as part of our unacknowledged self-image. I think the difference is that we have all, in the past, we've sort of played over that, played over it, and tried to gloss it over, saying, and we're still the best thing, you know, we're still the city on the hill. And I don't think we're doing that anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons we have this crisis going, is because the reality of who we are and what we've done is finally sort of coming home to a lot of folks.
And many voices are being heard now that were never heard before. Mm-hmm. As you talked about, just kind of glossing over it, those voices weren't heard.
I think, too, I mean, you can take it back to a big... I like the word current, for current identity in there, because through the years, my grandparents came from Denmark in 1925, and to hear their stories of landing here and the opportunity and things that they wouldn't be able to do in Denmark, and hearing how, just, you know, growing up, hearing these stories about, wow, this is kind of a cool place we live, and then you get older, and then you have your parents, so I have my grandparents, of course my mom, first generation American. And then my dad, so parents are kind of, you know, then you go to college, you know it all. And so it's changed again, but how current identity based on past identity, or how does the current identity, how has it brought us to, how has past identity brought us to current identity? And when you throw all those pieces in from people from who came in, you know, the 20s from a different country who landed and thought this was the greatest place in the world, full opportunity, yet all this other stuff was happening in America in the 20s that maybe they weren't aware of. I mean, it's just so ambivalent.
It seems like that gets to part of the issue. We have a hard time holding together in our, maybe our so-called national identity, you know, maybe the good and the bad, or the pluses and minuses. We, you know, because sometimes if you start criticizing the U.S., yeah, others are, oh, well, it's all bad. Then on the other hand, you know, people who can't say one good thing about the U.S., and it's kind of like we seem to try to gravitate, or many of us gravitate instead of trying to incorporate all of that into our identity.
One of the things that I thought about when you said the word current, because it seems that, you know, there is changes, but it seems to me that the identity of this country has always been some kind of a grassroots turning everything upside down. There's, you know, like the 99%. I mean, there is always some. Just when you think it's really bleak, then there's this life that, in spite of some top-down control thing, will spring up and
create something unexpected. But that's something about our identity that that unexpected happens.
Coming back to Ian brought up the media. I mean, I really wonder if the internet, especially, you know, isn't going to be a very corrosive factor on the identity. And you talked about looking to the past. I mean, and certainly people do that, but less and less, perhaps. They're more interested in what's going on, you know, whatever, on the internet. And I really would think that that would dissolve United States identity. It might, you know, sort of blend into North American identity or, you know, Western identity, Western Europe, something like this. But my guess would be that it would become less and less unique, you know, differentiated from elsewhere.
I don't know about that. I'm thinking that there's a pretty strong push toward entropy. I wouldn't be surprised to see in not in the far future, you know, this republic or whatever the heck it is, dividing into a series of regional organization states. I have so little sense of identity with folks in the conservative states, and we don't even talk. We used to be able to agree on facts and then interpret the facts differently, mm-hmm. but now we don't even have a common agreement on facts or values, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something about us as critters that. The humans that make us need community. We can't live in this kind of fragmented crap for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah. Crap is a philosophy.
I had a philosophy or a logic professor who his favorite term thing was just like, yeah, it might make sense in terms of symbology, but if it doesn't pass the bullshit test,
mm-hmm.
it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because there are so many stories that we're waiting for someone with the loudest voice to tell us what our story is? Because you talked about your grandparents. My grandfather came over from Germany when he was 16. And during the First World War, he had to sell war bonds to prove that he wasn't some kind of fifth columnist. So he has one story, and your grandparents have another story, and Native people have yet again another story, and if you were a black boy, do you have another story? Mm-hmm. And whoever gets to tell us what our story is, we're supposed to accept that as common, and then that's our identity. So now the people who are telling us what our story is are economists and various kind of spin doctors or doctresses. And to some extent, culture, common culture, and it's kind of ephemeral. It's whoever has the loudest voice and points to some event, and we're all supposed to get behind that and accept that. But maybe, you know, we've been such a juvenile society, if you want to say that. We're sort of growing up and realizing that we don't have a common identity, maybe never have. And what does that mean? My, he broke all my toys. You know, now what do we do? And the volume of the interest groups is just being turned up to say, this is it, this is it, this is it. No, this.
Hmm.
The problem is everyone is screaming so loud at the same time you don't know who the loudest is.
Hmm.
And I tune a lot of it out. There's so
yeah.
many people screaming.
Or you just listen. You listen to what maybe matches your values, your core values,
yeah,
and your beliefs,
yeah.
as opposed, and then everyone else is just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I come here, people don't scream. For the most part,
it's my daughter's name.
I think somehow too we've lost the sense of working for the common good. Or the concept of statesmanship, and that it's very much a me thing on every level. And I mean, it's in politics, but it's also, you know, at one time 20 years on a job was an asset, now it's a liability.
Yeah, and so there's kind of this instant gratification, an instant, I want what's best for me, and it doesn't, there is no common good beyond that.
Brent, you don't have to raise your hand, I mean, you can just...
Oh, all right. I think most of you know that I'm an atmospheric scientist, and one of the things that I see is that science and technology are things that have made our creative identity as a country and helped our economy along. And I think that we've started to really go beyond depending on some immigrant labor in that area and have really ceded control of the scientific enterprise in the U.S. to immigrants and are just way too dependent on that. And too few Americans are taking that path and instead going into something that's easier and that will make them a whole lot of money.
And then I would ask the question, what is an immigrant?
Well, looking through the room, not necessarily knowing your backgrounds, I'd say every one of you, me included.
No,
except one.
I know,
except
I am.
But, I mean, Brent, your point is, I guess, I think two parts. Whatever the identity of the U.S. is, it's very much linked to technology and science. And right now you see an influx of people from outside the culture coming in and engaging that aspect here in the United States. And, I mean, I guess my question would be, that's going to, I would agree that would change, you know, our culture and the science and technology that gets pursued. But, I mean, that's one thing I guess I think about the United States. It's just this ongoing, constant change of what its identity is. And the structure is set up well enough to accommodate most changes. And so I guess I could, that kind of change I don't see necessarily as being something that's going to break the structure.
So part of the identity of America is the constant change, and the crisis is society looking for a common set of values and not seeing any in terms of how we look at ourselves and the rest of the world in terms of ethics and morals.
And how those values could be set. You know, there's plenty of attempts to set those values, but they call a process. Because there's no community consensus on whether or not the values that are being articulated are in fact values that the folks that have that the folks who are calling the shots have the power to do, you know, or not do, make change or not change, that they actually subscribe to those values. You know, that's the thing. It's really interesting because I spent part of my life doing community organizing and to watch what's happened in this country in terms of undermining community and community organizational attempts is really phenomenal. Anything that's called, that smacks of community organizing now is called trying to incite class warfare. And our ability to come together and articulate common cause except in opposition to something, is just amazingly scant. We don't have that ability. If you look at the Occupy movement, you know, it was a marvelous, a glorious experience, you know, I think, to see folks coming together, just being community, but not being able to move forward with articulated positions on social and economic issues that, because they were afraid that would split the community. We've got to that point.
So people can rally around what they're against, but not what they're for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I want to jump back to the word immigrant. And when did it become a bad thing to be an immigrant? I mean, think about what this country was initially, anyway. the melting pot. People could come from all over, and now all of a sudden it's no stay out. You need to stay out because your beliefs or your...
At least from what I've read, the Irish, and I have some Irish ancestry, but at times they were not welcome in many quarters. Signs that said Irish need not apply. They were considered subhuman. Irish immigrants.
Chinese,
certainly, yes.
And Southern Europeans got some pretty bad fare for a good long time.
Eastern as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Basically anyone who's not Anglo-Saxon and didn't come over here pre-revolution.
Pretty close. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to clarify, at least in some measure, my point. I think part of the problem with so much reliance on immigrants in science is that they're not identifying with their audience, and would tend not to communicate with the larger American public. So they have a greater tendency to simply stick to their offices, their laboratories, and not go out and present to more public audiences. And that's one of the requirements that that funding agencies are now introducing, and it's a difficulty for the scientific enterprise when the workers within that enterprise have difficulty in identifying with the people that they're serving.
It seems to me like it's far easier for an immigrant to come to this country and not be as engaged with the broader culture as it used to be, because you know the internet, cable TV, satellite TV, and so forth. And so, I mean, I guess sort of as a, but the question is, what is the identity? Another question would be, are developments making it, is it a problem? You know, that we're not going to have necessarily this broad identity, and that we might have these cultural enclaves that stay, instead of a melting pot, right, stay cohesive instead of blending in. And I think of, I don't know if this is worth injecting here, but I think of the importance of public schools, you know, to that process, so that, you know, when you have people all coming together in at least that very fundamental experience for many years. Anyway, I just throw that out there.
Well, that's a real interesting piece. You know, the public school piece is something. It's kind of like those elements that have led to some sense of unity and some sense of leveling and community are elements of the new America that are being undermined purposefully. The school system's one. Our public school system's being destroyed, I think. And I don't think it's an unconscious kind of activity. I think it's consciously being done. We were sitting in the lunchroom a couple of days ago, and I was really taken aback by a comment made by one of the gospel singers that were here earlier this week. And he was saying that, I've always kind of thought that, the middle class is certainly going through some major reduction. And he was saying that's a conscious kind of effort. And the reason that's happening from his perspective is because the middle class in most cultures is the class that foments discussion, criticism, and rebellion. The ideas come from the middle class and then are sort of absorbed in some upwelling occurs. Change occurs, and his position was that there's a real effort afoot to stop that from happening anymore. And I thought, well, that's kind of paranoid sounding, but it actually kind of rings true. So I'm thinking that one of the reasons we have a kind of foggy cultural identity is purposeful. You know, that we're not meant to have cultural identity anymore. And that at least none that comes from us. And but we're not quite naive enough to take to buy what's being sold in terms of the, you know, the leadership of the country.
I just thought it doesn't really relate to your point, but that this question came up, and this is not to any kind of criticism of the Romney campaign, but their slogan is "Believe in America,"
mm-hmm.
right? So, what is America?
Listen to the Romney campaign.
Well, I mean, maybe they'll have an answer, but I mean, it's obviously they take it for granted that we know what America is, but it doesn't sound like we do, I guess.
Campaigns and advertising have always played on things like that because it's vague enough that we all have made our idea of what America should be. So
mm-hmm.
if you keep it vague enough, you can get a lot of people jumping on your bandwagon without being too critical of taking a critical look at what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like campaigns, for the most part, try to be as vague as possible. As soon as they start really laying out concrete proposals, then they're open for much more attack.
I think Obama's Obama for America, not Obama for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it brings me. You mentioned earlier about. You thought the country might be splitting apart into these, you know, we talk about red states and blue states and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And, I mean, there obviously is some reality to that. But I think, you know, to some extent, I think that's partially developed by our electoral system with the Electoral College and so forth, that now you're in a red state versus a blue state. Whereas if you actually look at, you know, the distribution of people with differing ideas is not quite so stark. With the exception of Utah, of course. But you know, so maybe there's, I don't know if that's a word of hope or, you know, just something else to keep in mind. But, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, people are more intertwined and interspersed with their political disagreements
mm-hmm.
than it might appear on the surface. Of course, even if they are, unless they have, say, opportunities to discuss things like this, then that's not necessarily going to work anyway.
Well, I think we're probably going to see a lot more agreement on the big issues now that we've got this massive and comprehensive effort going to take care of voter fraud. That's good.
So would this be a good time to talk about identity? Like, do I identify with the United States? I mean, do we, are, you know, what does it mean to be, you're saying identity, is that something that is me, or is this something out there, the United States is there, and I'm not necessarily part of that identity? Am I part of this identity that we're talking about? Are we the identity? I mean, I identify as Christian, I identify as, you know, white male,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't make even, you know, so, you know, identify as coming from Seattle, so what does identity mean here?
Can I just tell one very short little story that a visiting theologian that I listened to once told me? There was a congregation in, let's say, North Dakota, because I'm a little vague on it, but, you know, let's hit North Dakota here. And they were just absolutely at each other's throats about homosexuality, just divided this little community. And one lady got up and she said, well, my son is dying of AIDS and he's coming home. Will any of you help me take care of him? Changed the tenor of the discussion immediately. What I'm after is to try to live with people who will that I can participate with in helping change the tenor of the discussion, changing the, you know, it more to will any of you help me do A, B, or C. You know, we are moving on now, and we live in the country. We own land. We're white. We go to church. We, you are partially. We own guns. You know, we are part of a demographic that is assumed to be something. I mean, you know, people would bet money on how we vote, and they'd be wrong. But I would like to, as that part of that demographic, be part of figuring out another question. I want to contribute to asking the questions, not being told what they are by interests. But that, I don't know how that applies to identity. That's what I identify with, is my ability yet to do that, old and white as I surely am.
Well, historically, that's been a big piece of what America was seen as, you know, an area, a community or a country in which there was a fair amount of social capital. You know, a lot of societies and a lot of community, community cohesion and caring. And that's pretty well gone in a lot of respects.
I think just yesterday, one of my daughters is 11, and how young kids are when they really pick up the difference. We live in Seattle. My family lives in Spokane, and Western Washington and Eastern Washington are pretty much split. I mean, you can barely say. And she said, "Mom, how come, you know, people in Spokane tend to vote for, you know, whoever, and we don't?" And, you know, and it's just noticing that. How she goes, "How come we're so different that way? But we still love each other, and we love to be with each other." It's like, the eyes of an 11-year-old and what she's, you know, especially in times. And we don't watch a lot of TV, well, pretty much any TV. And we don't, there's not a whole lot of internet access just because of where we are, busy life and things like that. So it's not like she's seeing these commercials that are coming back and forth. It's just through. So-and-so says this, how come they say that, and so-and-so says that.
So perhaps part of the reason we have a crisis of identity is that the media and the powers that be are telling us that our identity is one thing, and the average person thinks it's something completely different. We are told that we are supposed to be this individualist, rugged American who totes guns around, perhaps, just to throw one image out there. And we're feeling that we should be more of a community and, you know, let those things lie. They're not important. The values of the media and whatnot don't jive with ours anymore. Or perhaps they never did.
Yeah, I think the cost of media, or the cost of technology, is that it allows special interests or anybody with a voice to saturate everything we hear and think and whatever, and that what kept us sane in the past was just plain inertia and people not hearing what was going on, not paying attention to the news, mostly ignoring the news.
And depending on each other a lot more.
Yeah, and having to depend on each other.
Mm-hmm. I think a conversation like what we're having now is not typical in most communities. Most people just go to work, go home, and either watch TV, or maybe they talk to their spouse, and that's about it. They talk to people who basically would say the same thing that they say. So there's not a whole lot of multiple. Mm-hmm. Or synthesis, the actual reflection on one. So, no. Is that true, what they just said on the question? Is that really true? Or what, you know, is that what I believe? Do I believe that because I've heard it enough times now?
Yeah, certainly I get better news off on the Daily Show than I do off.
I don't know if, but I, as the conversation has been going on, I've been thinking about in our literature and folk heroes, in the U.S. they're all bigger than life. Paul Bunyan, Tom Thumb, the Peach Boy, in other countries, they're all small. And do we see ourselves as bigger than life then?
Superheroes.
I think that, you know, at this point, I mean, I think the mass media would suggest as much, but I mean, I think the reality is otherwise. And I, you know, and your point earlier about, you know, thinking about identity of the U.S. in terms of, do I identify as an American or something? I think at least one thing is that I don't think that there is a typical American. I mean, I think any suggestion otherwise is a mistake. There isn't a typical American. We're completely diverse.
Well, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I am an American, so how am I going to act that out? You know, whatever identity I carry. Mm-hmm. We all carry a different image of what but at the end of the day, I live my life. Mm-hmm. And have a responsibility with my life, with some integrity to the identity that maybe it's not the identity that is the dominant identity, but it's the identity I, you know, maybe I have a vision of what I want the United States to be. Then what am I doing to actually make that real?
And I was just thinking about how a lot of this kind of dialogue used to maybe take place in churches. And of course, churches are shrinking, as all community organizations are. You know, bowling leagues and so forth has been documented. So, you know, how, for me, to answer your question, you know, how should I live out being an American? I mean, for me, getting together in community is really important, whether that be through public school or a forum like this, and trying to, you know, wrap this little session up with a bow on top. I would just say, you can see this is not difficult. It just, and so, you know, as you go back to your communities, I would encourage you to look for something like this, or just start one, because it doesn't take anything other than putting a notice in a newspaper and saying, you know, there's going to be a Socrates Cafe, and we're just going to have philosophical discussions, and anybody can come. They can throw out any kinds of questions, and even if they, you know, they'll bring up all kinds of issues. And if you get people who can disagree in a polite way, and get to know their community members. I mean, I don't know. I think that's extremely valuable.
Can I ask you, what have you seen the demographics of groups like that mean?
Well, I haven't done this all over the world, let's say, but so Anacortes is kind of a retirement community, so it tends to be dominated. The Socrates Cafe is a little tilted toward older. White people, which is what Anacortes is like for the most part. But that's not to say there haven't been a variety of people who have come. Where you have these things will make a difference. It's called Socrates Cafe, so Christopher Phillips kind of started in a coffee house, you know, and depending on who's coming in to that coffee house, you might get different people who want to sit down and join. I also did this at our community college. And then we get, you know, all kinds of people from students. It was just fantastic because we had students, faculty, administrators, staff, and you don't get that kind of discussion and mixing, really at all, you know, in that kind of environment unless you do something like this. So, but it's easy, and people will come, even in a town. You know, we're only 16,000 people. And there's a regular group of 12 people that come, and more than that. So, anyway, small town of Concrete, Washington, very small, also has one, I guess.
Wow, really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is a small town.
It is.
That's a really small town.
It is. My wife's family is, she's from that area, and her folks live up there, run the Concrete Theater. So if you're heading back on Highway 20 to the west, see a movie at the Concrete Theater.
Just don't blink in.
Are there some rules of engagement, sort of like you ran us through nothing that has a yes or no answer. And
right.
So when you sign up to do this, you can sort of, those things are things that people agree to before they begin going at it.
I mean, I think the moderator wants to keep in mind that people need to feel comfortable in the conversation, but at the same time, you know, people should be able to disagree and you know, forcefully. And in my experience, I've actually never had it, you know, get out of hand or anything like that. But that just might be, you know, whatever, luck or happenstance. So, but, you know, obviously we just want to disagree politely if you disagree and lay out why you disagree. And you can, I think, usually find some point of connection between two positions. And, you know, so I wouldn't say that's a big concern in my experience.
Well, you got street creds. I mean, this is your thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that might help, but, you know, it's not like the moderator's tossing out bits of philosophical wisdom, so it's really not necessary. And I think to some extent, if you don't have somebody who has quote-unquote street cred, then everybody feels more comfortable contributing. You know, they don't feel like they have to run it by somebody. Oh, this is going to be okay. And so, you know, I don't think that necessarily adds, you know, anything else to it that's necessary. Anyway.
I think a lot of this used to happen just in the mornings in the cafe.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. If it's a little bit more structured like this, people might feel a little bit, especially in our culture, feel a little bit more comfortable coming and contributing because they know it's not just a free-for-all and that everybody's not necessarily going to line up on one side or the other. So. All right, well, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.